Hello, everybody. Just wanted to give you a quick note before the show starts, apologizing a little bit about the audio quality. It's not up to its current, usual standards, although it's never really the best, but we are working on it. We are, after all, on a shoestring budget, and our equipment's not great, but I do want to apologize. This one is a solo show, and it's a little bit harder to carry. We recorded it in a little bit of a different way, and it didn't quite come off as well as I'd hoped, but I cleaned it up as best I could, and hopefully it does the trick. So without further ado, here is episode 55 of the Mainland Podcast. Hello again, everyone. It's time for the Mainland Podcast. I am Michael Citro from themainland.com, managing editor and founder, and we are welcoming you to episode number 55 of the Mainland Podcast, and this is going to be a little bit different this week because, well, as we approach Independence Day, it seems that the staff has taken a holiday, and I'm on my own this week, so it's going to be a one-man show, although I do have a guest coming up a little bit later to talk about Orlando City and FC Dallas on Independence Day, coming to you from Frisco, Texas, and that will be at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, and looking forward to a little cross-conference MLS soccer on the 4th of July. A lot of people are going to go out and look at fireworks, and I'm going to watch men kick a ball around on a field. So before we get to that, a little bit of a recap to give you here. Orlando City, of course, two games this week. Started off on Saturday night with Toronto FC, and Orlando City had not had a great record against Orlando. In fact, 0-3 last year, outscored 11-1. And so Toronto came into Camping World Stadium and left 3-2 losers thanks to a 100th-minute penalty kick goal by Kaká, the captain. He returned along with Darwin Serén back on the pitch, and they both played a long, long time in what was their return to the game. So it was nice to see both back out there. Darwin Serén was very, very good in the first half, very in form. He looked maybe like the best player on the pitch. And in the second half, he definitely tired, definitely could tell he wasn't match fit, get some bad giveaways, did not have his best half in the second half. Orlando City took an early lead through a Kyle Larin goal. Fantastic setup, build-up all around in the play from David Mateos playing the ball forward from the back all the way up to the goal by Larin. Molino getting an assist. Adrian Vinter involved. I think Kaká was even involved in there. It was a really beautiful goal to open the scoring. And it looked like that was going to be all the scoring for a while. Orlando City did get some chances on Clint Irwin, who made some really big saves. But to be fair, Orlando was leaving the ball a little bit too close to the keeper on some of those chances. Larin also hit the post. And then, of course, as you know, you come out of the second half, and boom, Toronto ties it up, and we're at 1-1. And just as it looked like another tie was going to happen, Adrian Vinter with a nice goal off some hard work from Kevin Alston, who didn't have his best game defensively, but he sure did contribute to that second Orlando City goal. He got forward and put some pressure on, and Molino ended up with the ball near the end line, chipped it back across to Vinter for the goal, made it 2-1, looked like everything was signed, sealed, and delivered. And then, of course, disaster strikes in the 90th with another goal from Toronto, Justin Morrow sneaking in behind Alston, and as I mentioned, didn't have his best game. And, you know, then the controversial ending we've all come to know and love at Camping World Stadium. Breck Shea gets a nice cross into the box for Julio Bautista, who was held. And Williams held him in the box, which I don't think would have been a penalty if he would have just let him go. But, you know, he kind of had him around the neck and kind of threw him to the turf afterwards. And that was a little excessive in the eyes of the referee, who pointed to the spot. And Kaká just drilled the spot kick off the underside of the bar. Gave me a heart attack because I thought the thing was going to come back off the woodwork and back into the field of play. But it didn't. It went in, and Orlando City rescuing all 3 points for a change instead of just one. And I was actually in the seats for that one. Usually I've been watching from the press box and covering the game, but Scott Crumbly, one of our editors, was able to take my duties over and give me a night off and let me go relax and be a fan for a change. So I appreciate him and Brent Petkus with their coverage on Saturday night. It was a big help for me. It was great. I got to spend the evening with my usual co-host, Andrew Harrison, and his lovely wife, Lindsay, who is very, very pregnant. And we sat in the supporters section and cheered and chanted and had a good time. And, two of the goals for Orlando City right in front of us. So it was nice to see that. And it was good to come away with the win. The man of the match for me, it's hard to really give one. I think it had to be Molino. Kaká had a good game as well, but I think Molino was probably the man of the match for me. Set up two goals, was really involved in the game throughout. He did get subbed out, but I think that Molino for me was the man of the match. And we'll talk a little bit more about Kevin Molino because he played a big role in Wednesday night's game against Fort Lauderdale in the U.S. Open Cup. And that one, I was back in the press box for that one. And on a weeknight, you don't want to watch 120 minutes on a weeknight when 90 will do. But that's what we had on Wednesday. We had a 1-1 game. Fort Lauderdale scored early. They did have some nice pressure early, and they were able to get an early goal. But Orlando City basically dominated the entire rest of the game. Kevin Molino went through about four or five Fort Lauderdale Strikers players about just a couple of minutes after Fort Lauderdale opened the scoring and tied it at one. And from that point on, it was all Orlando. They just could not find the net. And as much as they held possession and got a couple of good chances in the first half, the second half was all played in the Orlando City attacking third. It was really a tremendously dominating performance, I thought, from Orlando City, but they just could not find the net. They hit the crossbar, Haji Berry hitting the crossbar, missing just inches wide a number of times. Restrepo, the goalkeeper for Fort Lauderdale, had a really, really great game. He was definitely the overall man of the match. He saved Fort Lauderdale's bacon time and time again. He had 8 saves on the night, and I think 5 of them were just really great saves. And beyond that, just very aggressive in the box. Any ball that came in, he was on top of it. It always seemed like he was going to get caught out on a second ball, but he never somehow did. Even if Orlando got to the ball first, somebody managed to block the shot before it could get on the net. But there were a number of crosses, corner kicks and set pieces that were just labeled for an Orlando City head. And just before the ball arrived onto the player's head, Restrepo's hand would just pop in between and knock it away. He was really on his game, anticipated the game very well, and I can't say enough good things about him. The reason I say all this is because there's a lot of people mad online about this U.S. Open Cup game, and there are a lot of factors involved in it. First of all, game is not streamed on YouTube, the only game in the round of 16 not streamed. Business decision, according to people we talked to with the club, and it backfired. Only 3,100 and change showed up for the game. By far the lowest crowd in MLS, since Orlando City has joined MLS, obviously, and the least attended game since 2011, the club's first year there at Camping World Stadium. Not only did that breed a little bit of bad blood, but I just think people have the finality of a knockout game and a tournament like this, it really kind of gets your emotions higher than they ordinarily are. I think the fact that it's an in-state team probably helped fuel that fire a little bit. And the fact that they're NASL and not an MLS club, people think that that's sort of their birthright to beat a team like that, that it's, that they're somehow beneath them. Just a few years ago, Orlando City was that team in the USL that was beating MLS teams. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. This is not something that never happens. This is not unheard of, for sure. And the fact of the matter is, I've seen some people beating up Adrian Heath about this for, I don't know why, because everything that he did was fine. The team dominated possession, dominated chances. They outshot Fort Lauderdale 24-7. Fort Lauderdale only had one shot on goal. Not just on goal, just one shot attempt after halftime of regulation. So I counted it up. It was about 90 minutes without a shot. So if you're holding a team 90 minutes without a shot, that is domination in my book. Meanwhile, Orlando with 20 shots after halftime. And, you know, a good number of them on target, too. Like I said, Restrepo called on to make 8 saves, on 9 shots on goal. And just a little bit unlucky on a few of those. Said Haji Berry hits the post. I mean, the crossbar, he could have had a hat trick. Haji didn't have a great game. I thought he was much better in the second half, but he didn't have a great game. I mean, the finishing wasn't quite there. And for a guy who's been very in form of late in USL, and, obviously he wants to, Adrian Heath wants to get a game out of him and, see what he can do against a little bit better competition. And I thought that, he got himself into dangerous spots. He took on a few guys in the second half anyway. He certainly did have some trouble in the first half of knowing what to do about being able to beat defenders with his back to goal and make those turns. He wasn't able to do that. So, as far as I'm concerned, Adrian Heath put out a squad that was capable of winning. They showed that by the fact that they held the ball so much and got so many opportunities. They just couldn't find the net, and it wasn't, anything necessarily that anybody did wrong. It was great goalkeeping. It was, a little bit unlucky. A ball would get deflected here or there. Carrasco at one point had a free kick that deflected off the wall, and usually those things will wrong foot the keeper, but it didn't quite bounce far enough away, and Restrepo was able to capture it. I thought one player who played really well was Tony Rocha, who they signed on a short-term contract from the USL club to come up and play. I thought he had a really good game. Should have had a goal. Barry and he had a two-on-one situation, and Barry decided to keep it and take the shot himself. And, from Restrepo came out and made the save. And it was an opportunity there where maybe he can square the ball over for Rocha and he gets an easy goal. So I thought Rocha played pretty good. I also think that the club punching bag, Antonio Nocerino, played well. Our own Sean Rollins fought me on this. He didn't think much of his game. But I thought that Nocerino had by far his best game since joining the club, which I know that's a low bar. But, if you go back through our timeline and you look at especially the first half. I think he did fade in the second half, but I think in the first half he was doing some great things. He had some outstanding crosses. One he put right on Barry's foot that should have been in the net, and Barry didn't get enough of it and squibbed it wide. He was getting into the box. I know he's getting some blame for a cross that he didn't get ahead on, but he's a short guy, and he just couldn't get up high enough. I don't think he's got a great vertical. He did jump. I can confirm that he jumped, but he didn't. Doesn't have a great vertical. I think the ball probably mussed his hair on the way by, but he couldn't quite get on top of it. But I think overall, he was dangerous. He had one play where a pass came in from, I believe it was Shea. It could have been Rocha, but I think it was Shea. Ball came in, and Nocerino jumped over it, knowing that he had Barry behind him, but knowing also that Barry was onside. So it was a great play, but Barry couldn't turn, and he ended up, one of the few times, finding a teammate in the box. He popped it back out to Nocerino, who put a shot just about, I would say, 6 inches wide of the right post. Great curling ball that I think that Restrepo would not have gotten to had he been able to get that on target, get a little bit more bend on that. Came very close in the second half as well. He blistered a shot from the right top corner of the box that was labeled for the top left corner of the goal, but Restrepo made a diving save on it, and another diving save from Restrepo and Harrison Heath, who had a couple of really good chances. But in the end, the guys couldn't put the ball in the net. And in the 120th minute, Fort Lauderdale takes a quick free kick, a good 20 yards forward from where the foul was committed. And the referee all night had been quibbling over 1 or 2 yards from where the spot was for you to take the kick. There was one instance where there was a foul around midfield where I think the Orlando City player might have been Carrasco, tried to put the ball down on the offensive half, like just almost touching the line, and he made him move it to the other side of the line, which was literally, 8 inches where he moved the ball. So for a guy who was a stickler all night on where to place the ball, or if the ball was even moving just a smidge, he would make the goal kick, goalie take the kick over again. For him to not be a stickler in that situation was a little disappointing. But also credit PC. The player's name is actually PC. for just an unbelievable rocket of a shot, and it curved right inside the post. Not much Earl Edwards Jr. could do about it. I don't think he picked it up right away because PC was able to use Seb Hines as a bit of a screen. I don't really see what the team could have done much differently in that situation, other than, you know, take the tactical foul and give him a free kick. So 120th minute, just about to go to penalties, and Fort Lauderdale steals it at the death of the game, and Orlando City is out of the U.S. Open Cup for 2016. The good news is the fixtures won't be too numerous in July and August, and so that'll help a little bit with the wear and tear. Getting back to Kevin Molino, there was a moment in the 67th minute where he kind of lost his mind. There was a foul in midfield, and the strikers were diving all night. They were wasting time almost from the drop, you know, from the opening kickoff, wanting to get to those penalties. They had advanced twice on penalties earlier in the tournament, and it looked like they wanted to do it again, and it almost happened. But, you know, there was a phantom foul. There was some pushing and shoving, and a guy grabbed Kevin Molino from behind and spun him around. As he spun him around, another guy came walking from behind Molino. I don't think there was anything intentional in it, but bumped him. And it was significant contact, but not, like, enough to hurt you. But he was, I think, already a little bit irate over the tactics that the strikers were using, and also the foul, and then being spun around and knocked into. And he'd had enough, and he took a swing at somebody and got red carded. Red card for each team at that point. Put both teams down to 10 men, and I think it's a shame because he was the best player on the pitch for either team. At that point, he was the best player on the pitch for either team, and certainly probably man of the match for Orlando City up to that point. But I'm going to go ahead and give it to Tommy Redding for Wednesday night's game. I thought he played a good game. Unfortunately, out of the tournament, and we'll move forward and muddle through. You know, we'll just go ahead and concentrate on getting some MLS wins, hopefully. The Pride, yeah, Orlando Pride, they were also the victims this week of a comeback. Took a 1-0 lead on the Portland Thorns in the second half on just a rocket goal from Jasmine Spencer. A phenomenal goal, a goal that deserved to be a game winner and could have been, except the Thorns started playing direct over the top of the defense, which was pushed too far up, and there was too big of a gap. The foot speed of the central defenders was not good enough, and the Thorns exploited that and scored two goals on the counter by long direct balls and won 2-1. So it was the first Pride loss at home. Ruined their perfect record since joining NWSL, and it's too bad because you know, it was, I think, a really good game for everybody on the Pride team. I thought Kalen Kyle had an especially good game in the central midfield, breaking up plays all over. I thought Spencer played well. You know, Morgan still is having some issues with finishing. But, you know, hopefully she'll find her groove here during the Rio Olympics and come back to us in excellent form. Ashlyn Harris was called on a few times, made some good saves, but you know, she couldn't really do a whole lot about either of the goals. I think that maybe there was a chance that she could have come out and challenged maybe on the first one, but I don't think she could have done much about the second one. And tip your cap, the Thorns are the deepest by far team in the league, and they are the class of the league for a reason, and they're very, very good. Still haven't lost yet this year. I don't have a player of the match for you. I do think that Steph Catley played pretty well. I think Edmonds had a little bit of a tougher game than she's been, you know, having. I did like Spencer. She played well. But yeah, nobody really stood out for me, I think, in the Pride game. I think it was just a solid team effort. And then the cool thing about over our, well, not over in Melbourne this week, but Orlando City B, getting a win on the road at FC Montreal on Sunday afternoon. Going up there, and Barry got a goal, and so did Mendoza, scored the third one. But, yeah, that was a wide-open game, both teams having a lot of really good scoring chances. Mark Ridgers had a big game. I thought Devron Garcia played pretty well. and just a good game for OCB. And they are actually playing some pretty good soccer, which is, you know, if you think back to the first month of the season, they were not very good. But they, I think they've come together. They're starting to gel. And it'll be interesting to see what they do this weekend after some of their players have been logging a lot of miles and a lot of minutes in very hot situations. Obviously, a daytime game on Sunday, and then Barry and Rocha and Heath all playing, you know, big minutes on Wednesday night in the hot, humid Central Florida atmosphere. Anyway, I think that's about all that we've got to talk about. We do know that we're going to be missing the Olympic players here from the Pride, but surprisingly, Kaylin Kyle, who was named as a substitute or an alternate for the Canadian team, has asked not to go unless she's needed. She doesn't want to go to Rio unless, you know, there's some injuries and she's pressed into service. And her request has been granted by the Canadian Federation, and she's back in Orlando, and she'll be playing for the Pride. And if she plays like she did against Portland, well, that's a good thing for the Pride, because she really was rock solid, I think, in that game. She rarely put a foot wrong. It was good to see, because she's had a little bit of a trouble, I think, adjusting to this team, and she's had some tough games earlier in the season, but I thought she really played well. I would say she was probably, you know, up there for player of the match, in fact. That's what I thought of her game this weekend against Portland. Anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about FC Dallas. We're going to talk about Orlando City at FC Dallas, and we're going to bring in our guest right now. Yes, I won't be the only voice you hear this week. We have our guest coming up right after this. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, very happy to have with us Ben Lyon from Big D Soccer. Ben, how's it going tonight?
Terrific.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being with us. We're happy to have you on ahead of the big game on Monday night, Independence Day, Orlando City at FC Dallas.
Yes, indeed. It's a tradition like several others. I think Colorado and LA always get a game on the 4th of July too. And it's kind of like the Dallas Cowboys and the Detroit Lions with the Super Bowl.
Or the Thanksgiving game.
Not the Super Bowl at all.
The Detroit fans would love to make that a tradition, but I don't think that's happening anytime soon. Anyway, this is Orlando City's second season in MLS, second year that the team will be away from home for a game out west for Independence Day. They were at Real Salt Lake last year, and this year they get to go visit Toyota Stadium, one of the many stadiums named after Toyota, I might add, around the country. Are you going to the game?
No, actually. I live in Los Angeles now, and I will be watching the fireworks in the Port of Los Angeles Monday evening. Probably from my living room.
I guess the good thing for you is that your team's games are on early for you.
Yes, indeed. That is a huge perk of living on the West Coast.
I remember going to Hawaii when I was in college, and there was it was Monday Night Baseball was on, and it was the middle of the afternoon, and I was like, "Whoa, this is weird." But you know, I guess you get used to it after a while.
Yeah, no doubt. It's great, actually. I really like it because there's never a game too late, and frequently I'll have a whole evening free where I can do something else.
Nice. So FC Dallas came into Orlando last year, won 2-0, as I recall, and it probably wasn't even that close of a game. What are you expecting from Monday night's game? Have you been paying attention to the Eastern teams at all?
Oh yeah. I've got a broad knowledge of the league right now. I think Orlando has looked good at times this year. I know that they have not had the greatest home form to back up. Home results, I should say, to back up their form. It seems like they're a little bit unlucky in their results. First game of the season aside. And I recall last year, you guys were missing some players, namely Kaká was out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm definitely not expecting a walkover. I mean, it will be tough, on both teams because they both played 120 minutes midweek. And Dallas pretty much rolled out the better part of their regulars for that. So that and the fact that it will be different compared to most 4th of the Julys, where the team coming in is maybe not accustomed to the hot weather and kind of melts after 30 minutes. I would imagine the Lions will probably be a little bit better prepped for the heat. I'm looking for an exciting game.
So Dallas has a really, really good home record this year, one of the better home records in MLS. What is it about Toyota Stadium that, I mean, obviously, besides just the hard thing about playing on the road in this league, what is it about Toyota Stadium that's so difficult for opponents?
You know, it's kind of hard to put a finger on it. I think a lot of it is just the players themselves play better at home. They feel more comfortable there. It's not what I would consider one of the more intimidating environments in MLS. You know, the crowd is like the fans that are there are very, very loud and supportive, but they're not intimidating. You know, the seats are close to the field, but it's still not what I would call, you know, daunting necessarily for a visiting team. Except for, you know, you get to May through September, the weather is really hot. And, you know, if you're practicing in L.A., in San Jose, in Canada, in the Northeast, and you come to Texas in the middle of the summer, well, it doesn't matter if it's 8 o'clock. It's still, you know, 90 degrees and kind of sticky. The Dallas players are acclimated to that, and they can play at a higher tempo for longer in those conditions than most of their guests during the summer.
Let me ask you a little bit about tactics now. Oscar Pareja, does he like to press high, or is he willing to let the opponent have possession and sort of hit on the counterattack with that speed that Dallas has? Or, you know, how does he kind of like to attack?
You know, he changes it up in game, and one of the good additions this year has been Maxi Arruti. He hasn't necessarily lit it up with goals galore this year, but one thing that he does do very well is provide pressure from the forward spot. He is a constant nuisance to the back lines of opposing teams and has caused several turnovers that have led to goals for him or his teammates this year. He's been a good addition. Clavijo is looking at adding another striker in the transfer window coming up, but you know, as long as Arruti brings that pressure at select times during the game, he's good as a striker who doesn't score all that much. But yeah, depending on game states, they'll pull back and look for the counter too, because their wingers are both really, really fast and good when they're isolated. Fabian Castillo, of course, is very well known. Michael Barrios is actually the leading scorer on the team since this time last year, so he's very under the radar, but does bring, you know, that same kind of ability to score off of the counter and, you know, take a one goal lead and turn it into a two goal lead pretty quick.
A lot of Argentines on the FC Dallas roster. You guys sort of have a pipeline to Argentina there?
Well, it's not just Argentina. It's Colombia. Both Barrios and Castillo are from Colombia.
True, four Colombians as well.
And then Grueso, who played for Ecuador during the Copa America and was a Bundesliga player this time last year. He's from Ecuador, obviously. It's more just a generalized pipeline to South America. We got maybe like a tinge excited whenever Nando started tweeting or retweeting Forlan last week, And Clavijo's is from Uruguay originally as well. So that's probably between him and Pareja, who's from Colombia, they've got a strong, strong network in South America.
Now both Orlando City and FC Dallas have a Canadian star on their roster. You guys obviously have Tesho, who's really coming into his own, and of course Kyle Aaron for Orlando City.
Yeah, and we talked about the South American pipeline, but Dallas has had some pretty good luck with their draft picks as of late. You know, he was kind of an unknown that we picked in the first round, and he's been a strong contributor in all three of his seasons here. You know, well earned call up to the Canadian national team, and you know, provide some flexibility. You know, he fills in on either wing. Sometimes he plays up top, off the bench. Sometimes a starter. He is a good attacking complement to what Dallas has in their best 11.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, I think everybody knows, you know, everybody here is pretty familiar with guys like Rosales and, you know, who came over from Vancouver, the Blas Perez trade. By the way, Blas played here in the Copa America and was phenomenal. He put on a show here in Orlando at the Citrus Bowl or Camping World Stadium, as it's called now. And, you know, he was pretty amazing. A guy who had 100 caps plus for FC Dallas. Before I get into that question, I was going to ask you, what is it like, what is life after Blas Perez like for FC Dallas fans?
Well, you know, I touched on it earlier with Rudy. You know, he's been a good fill in, and that target striker spot, probably brings a little bit more energy to the position and maybe a little less of the guile and dark arts that Blas brings, but he's also hasn't been as productive a scorer as Blas ever was. And so, I mean, it remains indeterminate as to, you know, how much or how little we miss Blas at this point. He has kind of had a history of wearing out his welcome places, and I don't know that things were going all that great toward the end of last year. And, you know, we're able to flip him for Rosales, who's been, you know, a good late-game sub and fill in for Diaz. So right now it seems like an okay trade, but we also don't really have a whole lot of depth up top. So hopefully Clavijo finds a guy that can adapt to the league quickly.
I was going to ask you about that, about Diaz and Rosales and whether they're playing together at all, or if that's just a straight one for one.
You know, I think they've played at the same time in a couple of games this year. Rosales is comfortable on the wing as well as kind of playing that playmaking position in central midfield. But I haven't seen anywhere where it lists him as injured. Rosales hasn't made the roster in the last couple of weeks either, so I don't know what's going on with him at the moment.
that's got to be worrying as a fan to not know what's up with that. But some teams are a little bit tight-lipped about things like that. So
yeah.
So getting back to the question I was going to ask you, you know, people know about Rosales, they know about Fabian Castillo, Tesho. Who are some of the Dallas players that maybe fly under the radar nationally that maybe Orlando fans should be on the lookout for when watching the game on Monday night?
Well, I believe Ryan Hollingshead will be back in the team on Monday night. And Pareja's, over the course of the last couple of years, has done a phenomenal job of converting wing midfielders into outside backs. And he's one of them. He was actually drafted as a second rounder back when Shellis was still the coach, and the team did that with the understanding that he was going to take the first year off to help his brother build a church out in the Sacramento area. And you know, after that year, we got introduced into the team, played a little midfield, and then he got moved to outside back and played great there. Like, we kind of talk about him as like an under the radar national team candidate, because I mean he does it really well, and he can play either side of the field too. So that's probably one that would go under the radar that maybe Orlando City fans aren't really familiar with. Although I want to say that like he either got a goal or an assist in the game last year. So maybe I'm underselling Ryan a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, team gave up a lot of goals last year, so they kind of blur together. especially during about that time of the year. That was a little rough patch for Orlando City fans. They went on a long winless streak in that area, and that was not it was not a whole lot of fun. There were suspensions and international call-ups and a lot of injuries last year around that section of the season. So we're trying to block that all out and just look forward to this year, because things are a little bit better this year. It's true that the team is drawing way too many games and not getting 3 points and just having to settle for one. But, you know, in a lot of those games, I think, would have been losses last year. So, you know, I think there's some improvement there. Certainly they've lost some points when they've been in position to get wins instead of draws. But they've also gained some points in games that they were down and out of. Down 2 goals against New York City FC on the road, down 2 goals late against Real Salt Lake in the opener and things like that. So,
oh, that was exciting.
Yeah, it was. I was there, and it was a little bit heart-stopping. So, you know, what I think we're going to look at now is the standings, because FC Dallas right there in the Supporter Shield race, although I guess Colorado's got a couple games in hand, Real Salt Lake a couple games in hand, but what are the expectations from the fans this year from FC Dallas?
Well, gosh, I mean, I started out the year saying, yeah, you know, we win the treble this year. Yeah, U.S. Open Cup, Supporter Shield, MLS Cup, we can do it all. I think the expectations are fairly high and reasonably so. I mean, they were a very young team last year and did very well. They lost out on the Supporters Shield by goal differential, which sucks because New York got to play like a handful of games against, no offense, a couple of expansion teams. So, so yeah, I mean, there's no reason why they couldn't duplicate or improve upon that, but you know. Unfortunately, the West just got, you know, it got tougher this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Seattle, they got left in the dust. You know, they sold off Martins and haven't suitably replaced them, and they're going to be lucky to make the playoffs at this point.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Dempsey's missed some games and that kind of thing. I will say, though, while we're, you know, before we get too far away from the subject, that one of those expansion teams went to Red Bull Arena and put up a 5 spot and tried to do you a solid. So,
thank you.
You know,
thank you.
And in the other game, Sasha Kleshchen got Kyle Larin thrown out on a complete phantom red card. So we couldn't really do anything about that one. But, you know, that's Sasha Kleshchen for you.
Right.
All right, let's get into this game on Monday night. First of all, it's on a holiday. Are people going to go to this thing, or is the club playing it up like fireworks and all that after the game and that kind of thing?
They always have the game on 4th of July, and that's pretty much the one game that's guaranteed to sell out. I mean, it's not like Orlando where, you know, we get 30,000 people coming out for damn near every game, which is very, like, we envy that. We envy that so much.
it's not gonna last because our stadium's getting smaller next year, but it'll be fun to be in our own place with a grass field. That would be nice.
Oh yeah, yeah, and that's one thing that I didn't mention whenever we were talking about the game on Monday. Those guys, with you know an extra 30 minutes on the turf field, and then they got to travel across country. That could be like the one thing, like, I don't think the heat will bother them, but just like the wear and tear of a long week might make it tough for some of the guys that play too. Although I guess a lot of you, if Larin and Kaká missed out on the game, at least they're going to be well rested. So,
Yeah, Laren played about, I want to say, about 45 minutes ended up because he came on late in regulation. There were 10 minutes of stoppage and then the 30-minute extra time. So he played about a half, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. Kaká got the night off, as you would normally expect. Molino played, but he got a red card, so I don't even know what's going on with him because he tried to throw a punch or a slap or whatever, you know, whatever, a soccer punch, I guess, is what I would call it. But we don't know really what's going to happen because of the Dempsey suspension last year carrying over. So we're waiting to hear about that. But the midfield should be okay. The starting defense, though, pretty much went the entire time. So they might be a little bit worn out by the end of the game, although I think probably David Mateos will play instead of Tommy Redding. But yeah, it was a long night for the defenders, and did manage to rest the starting central midfielders and most of the attacking players. So it'll probably be a mix. Maybe we'll score one we wouldn't have ordinarily and give one up we wouldn't ordinarily have.
Redding's with the U-20s, right?
Well, you know, we thought he was supposed to be with the U-20s. We were surprised when he made the lineup because they had the U-20s. I believe their first game was last night, and he was in the lineup. And we were kind of surprised by that, and we asked the PR department, and they didn't seem to know anything about it. So,
well, I mean, they don't have to release him for, like, a U-20-friendly tournament, so maybe they just decided, nah, you're sticking around, kid.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe they were just being coy with us, but they're, you know, what are you talking about? You know, I know nothing, you know, that kind of thing. But it was a surprise to us, but it was nice to have him because ever since Aurelien and Collin got traded off, you know, the team's been basically operating with three center backs, and you know, Seb Hines had five yellow cards, so he had a yellow card accumulation thing to sit out, and Mateos took a knock, and you know, it's been basically you know, hang on with both hands because you're basically only having two healthy bodies in the lineup at any given time. And although Connor Donovan's starting to come back from his ACL last year, he was a rookie last year, and he's been playing for the Orlando City B squad over in the USL, and so he potentially could play if called upon, but I don't think anybody with the first team is ready to rely on him just yet. But Monday night, what is your – we always ask our guests this. What's your key matchup of the game? What's going to decide the game? And what's your predicted scoreline?
Well, you guys will have Higuita on Monday night, right?
Yes.
Well, for me, then it's going to be Higuita versus Mauro Diaz. There's some talk about Diaz not playing or not starting on Monday night because they played – you know, 120 minutes last night, but I'm thinking with the extra day of rest and the fact that they don't travel, he'll probably be good to go. And there's your guy right there. So I don't think that the strategy for defending and kind of putting the shackles on Diaz has changed much from last year. I think you kind of try and crowd him and deny the ball and strategically foul him, you know, a lot, and maybe try and kind of wear him out that way, and that seems like right in Higuita's wheelhouse. So, you know, that's to me like the key matchup right there. If Mauro finds those pockets of space and is able to turn and face towards goal, then he's going to figure something out at some point during the game. And Castillo's starting to shoot better. Barrios is back to full speed. Arruti got a goal in the U.S. Open Cup last night, so maybe he's starting to find his touch again. Yeah, it will be all about limiting the number of times that Diaz can make those incisive passes or, you know, the occasional bicycle kick assist like he had to Castillo last weekend. Did you see that?
I did not catch that. No, I haven't gotten a chance to watch film yet.
It's the most ridiculous thing ever. I mean, you know, bounces it off his chest. Perfect bike with the perfect weight to a streaking Castillo who puts it on goal. It was a good shot on goal too. I'm not sure if it won goal of the week or not, but it was up for it.
So you're, you know, Chris Nogueta playing against a bunch of Colombians. I think we could guarantee a yellow card from Chris Nogueta on Monday night.
Yeah, well, maybe.
That's kind of the running joke amongst Orlando City fans is, oh, there's his yellow for the week. You know, he gets one every week.
Grueso's kind of like that too. So, you know, if you want to flip it the other way, Grueso will probably start on Monday night, and it will probably be the other key matchup, Kaká versus Grueso. Mm-hmm. And yes, there'll probably be a yellow card on him.
Oh, man, South Americans all over the field on Monday night. What's your predicted scoreline? How do you see this one finishing?
Well, whenever I submitted our prediction for the weekly predictions, I kind of figure it's going to be a close game until later in the second half, and FC Dallas will pull away with two late goals to win 3-1.
Ah, you're familiar with our defense.
Not totally. I like Tommy Redding a lot. I think he's got the future.
There, it's not a bad group. It just seems to be that they're always punished for the one lapse or two lapses they have in a game. It's always in the net. Nobody just, you know, gets through because someone switched off and then, you know, whiffs on the shot or the cross doesn't find them and it's behind them or something like that. It's always perfect play. Finished it, game over. That's been a theme this year. It's been, you know, you could say, well, you know, they shouldn't switch off, which they shouldn't, and, you know, it shouldn't have these lapses. But I think every player in 90 minutes has a lapse at some point.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys have rotated your back line a little bit. I know Ramos has been hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit.
And, you know, like the team – outside of Ramos and Breck Shea from last year, I mean, you may still find that there's some benefits to cohesion that come a little bit later in the year, which would be great for you guys.
Well, we certainly hope so. We could use it. Not entirely sure that something won't happen in the summer window to provide some additional coverage there, but yeah, Ramos has, in fact, just came back from his hamstring injury, and in the 37th minute last night, he went down with the hamstring injury.
Ugh.
So, he did one of those deals where you pop the ball behind the defender and try to run around him on the other side, and he went down in a heap and then immediately called for the bench. So, you know, it's tough to see because he had been out. I think he got originally out in the Montreal game in May, like I want to say around the 21st, I think it was. And he had just got back in the side and had been sitting on the bench because Alston had been playing good and is playing pretty well in his place. And, didn't, you know, Heath's not going to take out a guy who's actually been doing well. Ramos had been kind of inconsistent anyway. But, you know, he came back last night, was supposed to be his run out to get him back into form. And, you know, he's had a setback. So. So I'm sure we'll probably see, you know, Alston and Shea and as the fullbacks, and then Hines and Mateos, you know, unless Redding really didn't go, isn't going to join the U-20s, and if he's not, he may be in the lineup because, you know, those 19-year-olds, they recover pretty quickly.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the strong features of having a young team. They do tend to bounce back a little bit more quickly.
Well, Ben, really appreciate you being on the podcast with us this week. Why don't you tell people where they can find, you know, information on Dallas from you guys on the web and on Twitter and all that good stuff?
Well, BigDSoccer.com, of course, and the Big D Soccer on Twitter. I'm Bird Turgler on Twitter. I write the fantasy article with Phil Letchford. We're both top 50 players. Overall, I'm number 2 currently overall. So, yeah, we produce the goods consistently.
So yeah, that's good. That's great to hear.
And I also write national team stuff, and then occasionally I'll write something really really zany, suggesting the management try and boost you know, hostility of the environment by having a gun show at the stadium every weekend.
Yeah. Well, that what could go wrong?
Yeah. What could go wrong? I know. Like I say, it would be the most intimidating venue in all of CONCACAF if they did that.
Yeah. You know, the Mexico's got nothing on it. The Azteca, that's nothing.
Yeah.
Ben Lyon, thanks so much from Big D Soccer. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast, and we will hopefully talk to you again soon.
All right. Yeah. My pleasure, Mike.
Well, that'll just about do it for episode number 55 of the Mainland Podcast. Big thanks to Ben Lyon from Big D Soccer for being with us. I really appreciate him stopping by. We had some technical issues and still having some technical issues tonight. Really apologize again about the audio quality. Not up to its normal standard, even though its normal standard isn't the best. It's as best as I can do right now and what I've got to work with. But who knows? Maybe with a little bit of sponsorship, we'll be able to get some equipment. Do it upright. Anyway, before we get out of here, give you a little bit about my key matchup for FC Dallas and my score predictions. We do this every week, and, of course, my prediction's never right. I will say that the key matchup for me is the back line of Orlando City. How does it hold up against that Dallas attacking force? If it's Tesho Akindele, if it's Fabian Castillo and his speed and shiftiness, if it's Diaz, if it's, you know, Rudy or Barrios or any of those guys, you know, how the back line of Orlando City communicates and works as a unit, that's my key matchup. The back line will be tired from having played midweek, although a little bit longer than you would normally see because it's a Monday game, not a Saturday. So that's at least a little bit of a comfort. It is going to be on the road, though, so there's some travel involved. There's always, you know, that it always makes you a little bit more tired. It's a surface that they haven't played on yet, although by all accounts it's a nice surface, so hopefully that'll play into their hands, especially Kaká's. And, you know, that's just going to be how it goes. I think that if the defense can hold it together and hang together and work as a unit and work in unison with goalkeeper Joe Bendick, then I think that Orlando City has a chance to come away with something from the game on Monday night, July 4th. I will say that my score prediction, though, is going to be a 2-1 win for the home team. I think FC Dallas right now is one of the best teams in the league. They're very, very tough to beat at home, and I just don't think that Orlando City quite has the firepower to get it done. But I really hope I'm wrong. I mean, I hope I'm wrong in a good way, and not like in a blowout way the other way. But, you know, FC Dallas came into Orlando last year against a shorthanded Orlando City team and some players missing and won 2-0. But I think that maybe Orlando City's a little bit better team this year. So maybe 2-1 sounds about right, but maybe something crazy will happen and they'll get a red card or there'll be a penalty kick or something. So you never know how these things are going to go. But anyway, that's my key matchup, my score prediction. I think if Orlando City's going to get a goal, I think maybe it comes from maybe somebody like Julio Baptista off the bench or something. I think maybe he will get one. Or Kyle Larin, obviously, is always a candidate as well. I would like to see, would love to see Darwin Serén score a goal. It's been a while for Darwin, so it would be nice to have him score. But hey, I'll take it from anyone at this point. Let's just not turn down a goal because goals are not easy to come by, as we found out Wednesday night through numerous chances. Anyway, that's going to do it for episode 55. Again, apologies for the sound quality. We'll hopefully be back to the normal quality next week. I want to thank again Ben Lyon from Big D Soccer. Check them out on Twitter and check them out on the web, bigdsoccer.com. For anything you want to know about Dallas, they'll have full coverage of the game, as will we at themainland.com. Please check us out at SB Nation. Please, you know, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, at The Mainland. And we will be back next week to break all of this down. And we will have a short turnaround because Monday it's FC Dallas. And Friday the team will host the Houston Dynamo. So busy time in the club's schedule. So until next week, I am Michael Citro from the Mainland Podcast, signing off saying, Go City.